Support for The Morning Show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. Support for The Morning Show also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. And we welcome you to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD-HD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. We're doing something really interesting and out of the ordinary on today's morning show, although we are doing it with a very familiar name and guest and friend to the morning show, Gary Stamm, a highly accomplished local actor who's been on the morning show any number of times to talk about various performances that he has been a part of in primarily Racine, but Kenosha as well. And he's also from time to time been part of the 91.1 Players. One of the last times Gary was on the program was when he talked about his impersonation of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And that is an impersonation which he was invited to share at Hyde Park itself, of course, well known as a longtime home of FDR. On today's morning show, we are talking about something very, very different. And it's Gary Stamm on screen versus on stage. And in the Food Network program called Chopped. This was something which was actually recorded way back in April, but it only aired last night. And Gary has been contractually obligated to not share any significant details or information about the show or how things turned out with anybody until the program had actually aired. So it aired last night, and so now Gary is free to share the story with the world. And of course, most of the world, anybody interested in the show Chopped, already kind of knows how things played out. But this is an opportunity not only for us to kind of relive it, but also to be taken behind the scenes of this really intriguing television series and the exciting experience which Gary Stamm had of being a contestant on it. Gary Stamm, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Thanks, Greg. Thanks a lot.
Good to have you here. What's it been like to keep yourself bottled up since last April? I don't mean like you've been a hermit locked away in your house, but I mean to have experienced something really, really big and yet not have been at liberty to really talk about it.
That was a challenge, and I right away I figured out I'm going to have to cope with this, so I came up with a standard line that I gave friends and family. It was a great experience, and I'm glad I did it. And in fact, my daughter, my youngest daughter, would try to keep trying to get it out of me over these last months, and I'd say the same thing to her, and every time I'd start it, she'd finish it because she's so used to hearing it. But that was a challenge. I'm pretty good at keeping secrets, but I knew if I said any more than that, like if I said how long I was there or something, people could, oh, so that means he probably got to that round or this round, people who knew the show. So I said, it's going to be those two sentences, and that's it.
Well, you did a great job. I'm assuming your wife, however, knew how it turned out?
Yeah, interestingly enough, she did, because, and I, from what I gather, they don't usually do this, or I don't know if they've ever done this, but they invited the wives to the taping. Now, they weren't in the room in the where we did the taping, but they put them in an adjacent room, I guess, and had about I think she said about four or five television monitors, because they were, you know, it was a multi-camera shoot. There were 9 or 10 cameras I counted at one point, but they fed at least like 4 of those cameras in there, so they were watching it as it happened, you know, the whole raw thing, and could stay until their husband was eliminated. So that was kind of unusual. So she knew, yeah. Was the one person that knew.
Well, before we talk about the format of the show, because that's really important for us to understand your experience, is kind of what this show is about and what happens in a typical episode of Chopped, we should talk about Gary Stamm, the master chef, for a moment, because, of course, they don't just let any riffraff onto a program like this. Tell us a little bit about your life as a chef, your life in the kitchen. How long have you been an enthusiastic and accomplished chef?
Well, half of that's not true, and Greg, that's the first time you've ever lied. Now I'm I'm a cook. I love to cook and have loved to cook for a long time. I don't know. My mom would let me come in the kitchen, do a few things, you know, and then certainly when I got off on my own, I always enjoyed cooking, took a cooking class in college as an elective, and always enjoyed it. But I am not a chef, and deference to my daughter, who is a chef, she's trained, she's excellent, everything else. I'm a cook, I'm a down-to-earth cook, and when I decided to apply for this, and maybe I can tell that story how that happened too, my daughter was on the show 4 years ago. She is a chef.
Unchopped.
Unchopped, yes, Unchopped. And she got on the show 4 years ago. And then she's a chef. She's a chef instructor in New York City. And when she, after the show, then you're on the mailing list for the producer like anything else. And so every once in a while she'll get a email about something, you know, saying they're looking for this or that. And she happened to see this one. It said they're going to do a grandfather's episode. So she called me and she said, "Pop, why don't you apply?" And I said, "No, I'm not a fancy cook. I just cook, you know, food." And she says, "They're not going to be looking for fancy. They just want grandfather as a cook." So I went online and hesitantly, and I looked at the application. I was sitting there one night at home. I think I had the TV on, and it was a written thing. You had to answer questions. And I said, I'm just going to have some fun with this. I'm going to be honest, but I'm just going to try to make some jokes in my answers and things like that. And I did. I had a good time filling out the application. Figured, oh, that's that. About a week later, I got a call from one of the assistant producers. Said, "Saw your application, and yeah, it's fine. Can we talk a little bit, or can I call you and we do a little talking?" So we had a phone interview that lasted about a half an hour at some point. And a couple weeks later, I got another call and said, "We'd like to do a Skype interview with you." You know, of course, they wanted to see what I look like. So we did that. That was about a half an hour deal. And I think after that, there was one more phone interview with one of the producers. And then a couple weeks after that, I got a call and they said, "Well, we'd like to use you on the program." I said, "You're kidding me." But yeah, I'm not a chef, and I'm just a down-to-earth cook, and that's when I knew I was in trouble if I was going to be in this show.
Right, right. What's interesting, though, and I don't want us to get ahead of ourselves, but I mean, a lot of what you did through the course of this single episode sort of paints you as a big fibber, because you know you were doing some things that are relatively sophisticated. I mean, the typical person who just says, "I'm just a down to earth cook." Well, down to earth cooks don't make sauces that you call a gastrique. I mean, they don't do that, nor do they know what the name is or whatever. So obviously you're not a professional chef, but clearly you're somebody who has done a lot of reading, has been kind of a student of fine cooking. I mean, that's not an overstatement, is it?
Well, yes and no. I'll tell you about that. I'd never heard the word gastrique when I put that application in, but then when I got accepted, I said, "Oh boy, I'm in a different league here." So I started taped all the Chop shows I could and started watching a couple a night.
Ah.
And I saw things like gastriques, and I talked to my daughter, the chef, and she said yes and this and that. Then she gave me the first two, which are the basic and the next to basic textbooks from her school. So I read a little in there, and I experimented at home, and I learned how to make a gastrique and a few other things, and the mother sauces of the French cook. But I also learned during this that all those names, which are usually French because that's where the culinary arts really develop, a lot of those things were things that just everyday cooks are doing. They're mixing things together that sweet and sour or whatever it is because it tastes good and, you know, because you grew up with it. Well, now it's got a French name and it was done before, but, you know, it's not that much different, really.
Interesting. So sometimes we're doing fancy things with fancy names. We just don't know the fancy name, or we don't know we're doing something fancy. We're just doing what
exactly
we like to do.
Yeah, my mother, you know, used to make cream cauliflower when I was little, one of my favorite vegetables, and she didn't know she was making cauliflower in bechamel sauce.
Wow. Interesting. One other preliminary question, then we'll get right into the show Chopped. Can you just say a word about your daughter, who is the professional chef, where that interest came from? I mean, did she just watch you and your wife cooking, and from an early age, was that something that intrigued her, or did that kind of come along later in life?
I think it did. She claims that the fact that our family always enjoyed eating together, we weren't perfect parents. I'm not trying to paint that picture. But one thing we decided to do, as busy as all families are, ours was too, we decided to sit down and have evening dinners together. And of course, the kids would be around while we're preparing them. And yes, she had interest in that. We had some special family dishes that we liked and everything that became traditions. And that's what she's taking into her cooking, is the importance of food and how it does bring people together and things like that. So she got that, and she learned the power of food, I think, like that. So it was kind of from watching us and being part of the family.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking today on The Morning Show with Gary Stamm, who has been a guest on The Morning Show any number of occasions, usually talking about performances he's given, for instance, at the Racine Theater Guild, which, among other many other characters, he portrayed the title role in the musical Scrooge. He was the mayor in The Music Man and a whole host of other roles that he has undertaken over the years. Currently, Gary is part of the cast for the Theater Guild's production of Mary Poppins. The final weekend begins tonight. He has been part of the 91.1 Players, most memorably perhaps in portraying the role of FDR. Today we have Gary Stamm on The Morning Show to talk about something which maybe some of you saw on television last night, an episode of the Food Network program Chopped, on which Gary was one of four contestants, one of four grandfathers who loved to cook. And Gary taped that episode back in April, but only now, once it has aired, is he free to talk about the experience. Gary, you were saying that your daughter, the professional chef, who actually was a contestant on Chopped several years ago, a pretty successful one, actually, yes, although she didn't ultimately win, but did very well,
yes,
encouraged you because they were doing this grandfather show, and so you went online and started with the application process. You said you had some fun with it. I'm curious, what were kind of questions did they ask you? What were they wanting to know in that preliminary stage?
Well, they wanted to know things like you've already been asking, how long have you been cooking? What are some of your favorite dishes that you prepare? What's your experience with, do you cook with your grandchildren? They were asking questions, obviously, that would lead you into it. So, I can't remember my answers, but like I said, I was trying to make some jokes and, kind of painting myself as hopefully a fun guy that liked to do things with the grandkids, which I certainly do.
Yeah. When it came to the Skype interview, which was, or a phone interview and Skype interview, was that sort of more of the same, but wanting to hear your voice and then wanting to see your face?
Exactly, yeah. I don't think they were looking for to reject anybody because of their big nose, because I got on anyway. But, but yeah, they want to see how you react on camera. They certainly didn't want people who were just going to stand there and not say anything while they were participating. They want somebody that had some energy, I suppose, and things like that.
Right. So when did you find out, between the time that you applied and the time that you were told you will be one of our four grandfathers?
Yeah, I think, if I recall right, the first application was, I believe, around the end of August of last year, of 2014, yeah. And those whole interview things took place over at least 6 or 8 weeks. So I think it wasn't until November that I really got the okay that I would do it. And then what happened after that, they said, well, great, we'd like you to be a contestant. And we have a piece that right at the beginning of the show, we show about 30, 45 seconds of every contestant as we introduce them, that we've pre-filmed, at their, usually if it's a chef, it's at their restaurant, or this case would be at home. Well, they didn't want to send a camera crew out to the Midwest, so they said, but your daughter lives in New York. Will you be coming out here anytime before the show? And I said, well, actually, I'm going to be out there at Christmas, which was, I think, only about a month or maybe 6 weeks away. So they arranged it, and we're right about 3 or 4 days before Christmas, we taped the little pre thing that you see at the beginning of the show. So that was done, but then I had that 4-month wait until we taped the show, and I was on pins and needles.
I bet, and boning up on the finer aspects of fine cooking,
but not deboning. I never learned how to do that.
Very good. Do you have any sense of how many people actually they were choosing between to arrive at you for? Was it dozens, hundreds, thousands, millions?
I think there were, of course, four contestants, so I think they had three applicants, and I had to beg one other guy to do it. I don't know how many applicants. That's a good question. I should have asked that. That would have been great. I have no idea.
Right. Well, I suspect it was a whole lot of people. There's a whole lot of people who would love to do just about anything to get on television. So, but you were one of the four fortunate folks. Did they fly you to New York, take care of your expenses, or is that not part of the deal?
Yeah, I was surprised, and, you know, I go into New York to visit my daughter and granddaughter enough times that I wasn't worried about that, but they did offer me enough money that actually covered the air flight and would have covered, about three nights in a hotel plus a few expenses, and I stayed with my daughter, so I actually made a buck or two on that deal, but yeah, they did basically cover my expenses, and there was another gentleman from Florida. I assume they did the same. The other two guys were local, so I don't know they got anything or not for expenses.
So when you first walked in the door, was that the day of the taping, or was there some sort of preliminary meeting with producers and other contestants and so on?
Nope. They told us to be at the Starbucks at, I forgot the corner of what and what, at 8 a.m. on that day, my wife and I. And we walked into Starbucks, and there was one other guy there that looked like Oliver. I said, "Are you for Chopped?" And he says, "Yeah," he says, "well, yeah." He says, "actually," he says, "I'm an alternate. They have an alternate that they keep close in case something happens right up to the end. Matter of fact, my daughter, who is on the show, she being in New York in the cooking scene, they had asked her to be an alternate, and she actually went to their studios. I think they taped 15 in a series, or 13, whatever it was, and she sat in a back room for 12 weeks because she was just the alternate and they didn't need her. She actually got paid a little for that. The second to last show, the night before, they called her and they said, "We're going to need you on the show." So that's why she got a show. And then that one, she didn't get anything. So
that's funny.
Anyway, so the guy in the coffee shop, he was the alternate, nice guy. Eventually, and one of the other guys did come in that was on the show. And then they walked us over to the studio, which is in the Chelsea Market place at in Manhattan. It was just about a block away or half a block away. They walked us over there, and we walked in there. The other two guys were already there for some reason, and that was the first time, that I'd met any the competitors or really the producers in person, except when we did the pre-show, one of the assistant producers was there with the camera crew for that.
Mm-hmm. So how did the day begin then, with all of you sort of sitting down and meeting, this is what's going to happen so far?
Yeah, they kind of sat us down in one of the little rooms that you actually see in the show where the chefs after each round kind of sit and chat with each other. That's where they talked to us a little bit about what the day, how the day would progress, and went through the schedule with us. That probably took about 15 or 20 minutes. With anything in television, it's all hurry up and wait. So after that, I think we sat around for a while and just kind of got to know each other. So maybe it was kind of planned. And then after that, I believe it was when they took us out into the studio, which was just right around the corner, and they showed us the workstations that we'd be at, and let us look around there, what they call the pantry. And on the show last night, they didn't show that. And usually at the beginning of the show, they say that besides the ingredients, they also have the pantry, and they usually do a shot of that. They didn't last night, but there's a couple of refrigerators, there's a freezer. They got milk products, cheese products, there's a big spice rack. They got vegetables, fresh vegetables there. Tons of stuff that you can use as well as the ingredients. So they let you walk around. I think they gave us about 5 minutes. It was 10, but it wasn't any more than that, to walk around and see where things are and what they are. All the appliances they showed us. And they asked us, you want us to show you how to use any of these appliances. So they're very, very nice and very helpful. They want it to go well.
Sure. Well, and I guess both of those are really important because, we'll explain the format of the show in a moment, but part of it is, you're concocting dishes right on the spot and certain ingredients you have to use, but there's other things you have to use to make anything, and you have to know what's available, and you also have to know how to operate this fancy stove or this fancy food processor and so on. talk a moment about your three competitors. And there was a bit of banter, and it seemed like four really nice guys. I mean, you were the nicest by far, but but no, it seemed like a very gentlemanly quartet. In fact, is that so, or did they edit away all the nastiness?
It is indeed true. They were three very, very nice guys, yeah. Yeah, we seemed to get along, seemed to be at ease almost at once. And you're right at the beginning, we said, and we were almost serious, we almost said, hey, let's make a pact. Whoever wins, let's split the money four ways. And, of course, that went away. That didn't happen. But it was said not so much in jest, because I think we all realized, hey, you know, none of us here are cutthroat and anything else. And, you know, I won't say the producers try to goad you into saying something, you know, or something challenging to the other person, but they, you know, they kind of encourage you to. It's good television if you say a few things. So, but there was less, I think, on this show than there usually is. In the thing, there was a few things. I'm gonna be the winner or something. Well, that's good. That's just confidence. And at one point, you know, I do it in my FDR voice about fear. Yeah. And they said, why don't you do that? So, but I didn't hear a bad word or a bad snipe or anything. There were four good guys, and We promised to keep in communication afterwards. The one fella got all our email addresses. Well, it didn't happen, but that's life. That wasn't because of any animosity.
Sure. The one thing that really surprised me was that one of the four contestants was, it sort of looks like, kind of a semi-professional chef. I mean, if I remember the introduction correctly, he and his daughter own some kind of maybe catering business or something. First of all, do I have that right? And did that bother you at all, that in a sense the playing field was not, in a sense, perfectly level?
Yeah, I never quite got that story straight myself. I think that probably he did have some more involvement with professional food preparation than the rest of us. But I think, and not in a bad way, I think he was also trying to, you know, little psych too, and probably his involvement wasn't as strong or as long as it implied, so he could kind of, you know, use a little psych on us. It didn't bother me because I had my mind on a dozen other things, number one. And number two, if I did think about it, and I think it kind of flew through my mind, I thought, well, this isn't like a catering position or something else. You know, this is no planning. Mm. Boom, you got to do it, and you got to do it in a specified time. So that kind of evens the playing field in its own way for us. So I didn't let that bother me.
Sure. I guess if somebody who is used to cooking, even if you cook all the time, but in your own time, by your own rules, fulfilling a carefully wrought plan, this could really throw you for a loop. I mean, yeah. And in some ways, all that experience could, in a sense, get in your own way to find yourself in this kind of position where you have to do what you do in such a drastically different way.
Like I said, I watch a lot of shows, and most, of course, almost all the other shows are professional chefs competing against each other. And not all of them, but you quite often see a professional chef just in that situation not handling it like I'm sure he does in his or her kitchen. So yeah, it's a different experience.
Right. We're speaking with Gary Stamm, a frequent morning show guest, about an experience which he actually had way back in April when he taped an episode of the Food Network's program Chopped. That episode finally aired last night, and so now Gary is at liberty to describe the experience, both what we saw on screen and a bit of behind-the-scenes information as well. Let's talk about the format of a typical episode of Chopped. And as far as I know, this episode, I mean, it featured four grandfathers who liked to cook, but otherwise I think it was a fairly typical episode.
Very, very typical. One slight difference I'll mention, yeah. But the format is the four chefs begin, and in the first round, you have to make an appetizer, but they give you a basket, it's like a wicker basket, and you open it up, and it's really true. You open it up, and you find out what four ingredients are in there. That's the first time you know about those, and all four of those ingredients have to be used in the appetizer, and you know, have to be featured, I guess you could say, even not hidden, but featured. Plus, you can use the other things in the pantry we talked about. And we had 30 minutes to prepare that appetizer using those four ingredients. Now, normally the chefs, the professional chefs, they only get 20 minutes for that round. So that was really the only difference in our show and the chefs is we got 10 more minutes for the appetizer round. And at the end of the appetizer round, you make four plates of dishes. There's three judges that judge, plus you make a plate for the camera for the use for the display shots and things. So you have to make four dishes, and they have to all have all the ingredients on them. After that, the judges test them, and then you're brought before the judges. You stand before them, and they talk to each one of you. You explain what you did. They give a little feedback, and then they chop. That's where the word comes from, the play on words of like a chopping block, but they eliminate one contestant from the four. Then you go to another round, so there's only three contestants now, and you're given four brand new ingredients in that basket, and you have to make a main course, an entree. And same process, you have 30 minutes. We had 30 minutes, and so did the other professional chefs on the other episodes. And you make an entree. Again, the judges look at it. They're judging on taste, appearance, and creativity. They also like to look at part of the creativity is how you transform the objects, too. It's important not to just, for example, if they gave you a hot dog, which they didn't, but they did it. If you took the hot dog and threw it in boiling water and put it in a bun, well, that's not transforming it. That's not going to eliminate you, but it's certainly not going to get you any points. So that's part of the creativity. So after the entree round, again, one of the three contestants is eliminated, chopped, and the two final contestants go on to the dessert round, four new ingredients in that basket, and 30 minutes to prepare dessert from that, and then, of course, the final one. The final, then, winner is not just judge. It's not like every round you're... the first two rounds, you are chopped on the dish you just made. But the last round, they review all your dishes. So it's kind of a cumulative process at that point, too.
Right.
There. So that's kind of the format.
At what point did you meet the three judges?
We didn't meet them until, probably about 5 or 10 minutes before taping. I don't think they introduced us to them until they were sitting at their regular table. For the people who regularly view this, I've got a little side table that they sit at that's only about, in fact, my station was right next to them, so I was probably about 15 feet away from the judges, and of course the other guys were each about 5 more feet away from them. But I believe they did introduce us to them at that table. We didn't really get to talk with them then. During the whole shooting process, we never sat down and talked much to him, but we made a couple comments, but not so much. Talked a little bit to the host, Ted Allen, but the judges were kind of, I won't say they're standoffish, that makes it sound like they were all very nice and friendly, but it was funny when they weren't talking to us or tasting the food, and we were just maybe standing there waiting for something. All of them were on their phones, you know, doing texts and things like that. You know, they weren't even talking to each other. They're busy, important people.
Sure, sure. And, of course, this is an official competition, and it really doesn't look quite right or seem quite right to be too cozy with the contestants that you're about to judge. So once the basket of ingredients is revealed and away you go, and you have 30 minutes to cook, how much of the time is essentially silent? How much banter is going on between the four chefs or three chefs or whoever, or comments from the judges or whatever? I mean, when we're watching you cook, it's not completely silent on the screen, but I wonder for that half an hour, how much of it is just four frantic cooks just working really hard?
Yeah, if I recall, I don't think the four competitors I don't think we talk much except behind you. You know, you're running around, so and there's hot stoves and hot things, so you always they suggested that. And you know, when you're going behind somebody, say behind you or whatever. But besides that, I don't think we talk much, if any, to each other. The judges, and again, I was closest, so I could hear them, and you could hear them kind of mumbling sometimes. There are a couple times more than a mumble about something that was going on. The host, Ted Allen, you could hear him more, he would occasionally come over and talk to you, but not much. So I guess it was mostly silent with just a little going on here and there. Speaking of that, I tried to be humorous a few times, just to keep myself loose. And I, at one point, they were talking about things, and I yelled over. I said, "Hey, could you guys keep it down? We're trying to cook over here." They actually used that at the beginning of the show last night, so I was happy with that. It got a chuckle out of me.
Yeah, that was a good moment. So let's talk about the first round, which is where you had to create an appetizer, you and your three competitors, and. The basket is revealed, and it's not a particularly promising array of ingredients, is it? So in your appetizer, each of you had to use what four ingredients?
First round, we had bologna. And, you know, I think that was because we're grandparents, grandkids like bologna. So we had bologna, we had mango salsa, we had frozen hash brown potato cakes, and egg cream. Now, you know, egg cream, something I think I had tasted once before in a deli in New York City, but it's a very Eastern, almost a very New York thing, egg cream. It's a drink, and I'm not even sure what it is. I'm not sure if it has egg in it. I think it's vanilla and seltzer or something, you know, so that was pretty strange to me. But though, yeah, bologna, mango salsa, the frozen hash browns, and the egg cream.
Wow. How long do you think it took for you to decide what you were going to make? You ended up making a really interesting hash, mm-hmm. and which struck me then as a brilliant idea. But how long? I mean, was that, 30 seconds, 2 minutes, 5 minutes? I mean, you have 30 minutes to create the thing. How much of that time did you spend just trying to figure out what in the world you were going to make?
You know, I bet it wasn't over the 30 seconds because I guess going in the whole thing, I knew, boy, time is, and I heard so many people on other shows saying time goes by so quickly and it's your enemy. And I knew if I start there and sat there and think, I'd lose time, number one. Number two, I'd probably just second-guess myself and overreact. So I think I saw potatoes, I saw meat, and I'm thinking, okay, hash. And I just almost went probably almost immediately on that one.
Hmm. As you are cooking, it appears that you are all but completely oblivious to your three competitors and what they're doing or what they're making. Is that, in fact, the
case?
Very
true. Very true. I don't know about others, but I certainly was. Yeah, you're just so concentrated. You know, you're thinking, oh, my gosh, we got to get this. We got to get all four ingredients used. I got to get this done in the 30 minutes. I got to get it all done so, something's not sitting, getting cold or whatever. At the beginning, I had nothing to do but just concentrate on myself. Only time I even thought about them is, like I said, making sure I didn't run into one of them.
So you end up making that hash, and was there something with the hash?
I put it on a crostini, I guess you'd call it. Again, it's something I really hadn't heard much of until I started watching shows. And I'm gonna admit, I had pre-thought, you know, you really can't pre-plan for this show, but there were a couple things, if I can work those into the show naturally, it would be kind of fun. Well, they didn't use the story on the air last night, so maybe I can quickly get it in. When my mom was, when I was a little kid, my mom every once in a while would deep fry something, not a lot, but every once in a while deep fry something. Well, she didn't have a deep fryer. We didn't have enough money for that, or maybe they didn't even make them for homes then, but she would just put oil in a big pot, big pan, and heat it. And she may have had a thermometer. She may not even had that. She probably just went on site. But what she would always do is take a piece of white bread we had around, and cut it up in little squares, and throw it in the fat when she thought it was hot enough. And if it fried nicely, that would indicate that the oil was the right temperature. And then she'd take those out and drain them, and she'd let us eat those like little toast things.
Mm.
And then when I started cooking, and I got my girls and would deep fry something, I always make those. And the girls would get to eat those sort of little appetizer beforehand. I termed them American fry bread. That was my thing. So
cute.
I thought, well, if I can use that. So I thought, well, okay, the hash would work on that as a crostini on American fry bread. Unfortunately, there was no – it was a nice pantry there, but there was no white bread, no wheat bread. All they had was what kind of bread was it? I can't remember the kind, but it was a thicker porous type bread, and that's the only thing I had to use. So I used it, and it it fried, but it also soaked up a lot of oil.
Ah, yeah. So that was one of the things they ended up not being real fond of, was how oily. Yeah, that's a shame. You'd think in a well-stocked pantry there would be some decent.
Maybe I just missed it. I don't know, in my haste.
Yeah, interesting. Well, at any rate, that was quite successful. In fact,
and my gastrique on. I'm sorry, the gastrique was over that too, wasn't it? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the fancy sauce.
The fancy sauce, yeah. Well, I'd learned gastriques, all they are is usually a fruit or something sweet that you add like a wine vinegar, something tart, and you cook it down. So it's a sweet sour sauce, just cooked down. That's all it is. But I thought, well, that might kind of zip up the hash. So we did that. And I'm thinking, okay, I got this. And I'll throw a little salad on there. They often like that. And I did and made it a little, just a oil and vinegar dressing, and threw that together real quickly. And
that's right. You did that to kind of compensate for some of the other things.
Yeah.
So you were kind of aware of the situation with your crostini. Well, at any rate, they liked what you created. And you were one of the three who got to go on. One of your competitors was eliminated. Mm-hmm. To the entree round.
Yes.
And the basket is revealed, and London broil was there, which is a fun thing to cook with, but with it,
broccoli rabe, which is a vegetable, and I'd heard of it, never cooked it in my life. Rutabaga, which is funny because with our grandkids, when we're kidding around with them, they're 2 and 4 years old, but we say, what do you want for dinner? And so you'll name some things. And we always throw in rutabaga. It's just a funny word, but that's always one of the things we offer them. They don't want rutabaga. They didn't know what it is. Here comes rutabaga in my basket. And the last was peanut butter taffy. Oh, my gosh, candy. Mm. Those are the four.
Crazy. I'd love to know somehow how they come up with this array of of ingredients that you must utilize because, at a glance, all four never make perfect sense together.
Right.
So explain what you concocted then.
Well, the London broil threw me. I'd heard of London broil. I've eaten London broil, but I'd never cooked London broil, and I didn't know, is it a tender meat? Is it a tough meat? Well, I erred on the fact that, well, let's assume it's not tender, but if it is, I'll just make it more tender. So 30 minutes, you can't, I couldn't marinate or something like that. So I said, okay, I've made one of the things I make at home, my mom used to make something she calls Swiss steak, which is just like she used round steak and would pound it out, pound it out with a little flour into it, pound it out to make it tender, and then cook it with peppers and onions, sort of a pepper steak type thing. So I said, let me try that. So I sliced London broil, pounded it out, found there were peppers, of course, in the thing and onions, and I did those, threw it in, browned it real quick, and said, okay, now I can steam it for 20 or 30 minutes. I usually do it longer, but that'll work. Well, then I go to look for a lid for this pot. There was no lid to fit that pot down below my station, which was very strange.
I still think that's one of the weirdest things in all 30 minutes was that, here's this wonderful kitchen and here's this pot that you're cooking with, and there's no lid that fits it. I mean, I was ready to throw something at the TV. It's like, how can you do that? How can you give people a pot to cook in and then not a proper lid? That just seems crazy.
It does, and I'm pretty sure that one I didn't, in my haste, didn't mess up. The bread, I may have missed the white bread before, but it was a limited space where that lid could be, and I tried every lid there, and it just wasn't there.
Did you each have your own set of pots and pans?
Everybody had identical, the whole thing was exactly identical.
So you were in trouble in terms of not being able to prepare these peppers quite the way you wanted to.
Right. But I'm committed. I'm at least probably 8 minutes into it at that point. There's no turning back. So I said, well, okay, the pepper's not going to cook like I want, but let's just do what you can with that.
So saute them or whatever. Yeah. Do I remember with the rutabaga, you ended up pureeing that?
I did, yeah. My daughter had said, root vegetables, Pop, if you get those, if you cook them in milk, they cook a little faster. Plus, it kind of helps break down and cream. So I did that, and then I decided I was going to puree them and make like a sort of mashed potato sort of take. I put some cream and stuff in it. And people always ask you, do you get to taste your food? Do you get to taste other people's food? Well, you don't get to taste anybody else's. You can taste yours, but you're so busy, you don't taste much. But I did taste the rutabaga, and I thought, oh, that's pretty tasty. I might make those at home now.
And the judges loved that. Yeah. I think they wished something had been better seasoned.
Salted. Well, I think both maybe the steak and the rutabaga, they said, need more seasoning, more salt.
Interesting. Well, at any rate, they liked all of what you created well enough to pass you on to the next round. By the way, remind our listeners how you use the peanut butter taffy.
Yeah, well, that was another thing I'd kind of learned from other shows. You know, you can melt it down and, again, throw some maybe vinegar or something, make a sauce out of it. And I decided to make a sauce over the broccoli rabe, which I kind of just sautéed, and boom, take chances. That one worked, too.
Yeah. And, by the way, is broccoli rabe like fancy broccoli?
Or no, it's more like a thick spinach or green.
Ah,
yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Interesting. At any rate, you and one other contestant then pass on to the dessert round.
Yes.
And you are given an array of four ingredients. And again, there's like sort of one outlier. It seems to me that it kind of throw you for a loop. So
yeah.
the four ingredients?
Well, the four ingredients were fresh kiwi, okay, fruit, that makes sense. Orange liqueur, not too bad. Chocolate milk powder, which at first my mind was racing. I don't think I even realized what that was. I was just, you know, it's powder you put in milk to make chocolate milk.
So like Nestle's Quick.
Yeah,
or, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And the last ingredient was a already made pie. It had the crust was made of crushed pretzels. And it was like strawberry cream in there and some fake whipped cream on top. You know, it's kind of a commercial pie that you probably wouldn't buy if you were actually at the store. So that one threw me probably the most. I said, well, here's a pie already made. What the heck to do with that? And that one I may have sat and looked at for a minute. And I thought, well, what if I blended this all together and made like another thing I'd come into with the idea, besides the American fry bread, I'd come into the idea if I could use my grandmother's biscuits, which was something that I kind of grew up on and my grandmother taught me to make and now I make with the grandkids, if I could work those in. So I said, wait a minute, I can take the biscuit recipe and kind of turn it into like a biscuit shortbread, blend that other stuff up and make a sort of a strawberry shortcake and throw some kiwis on top.
Mm. What happened to you in this round is a little bit like what happened to the most professional of the four chefs in the round before, I think, where he completely forgot about one of the ingredients. I think the peanut butter taffy,
yes,
until the last moment. And there was just no time for him to do anything. And so these were like little rocks that were just kind of thrown on the plate. And that really probably finished him as much as anything.
Yeah.
You had kind of a similar thing befall you in this last round, and it's one of the most interesting moments of drama in the whole half hour.
Well,
not that you want to relive it, but
no, that's okay. I'm good. Actually, two things. You talked about the ingredient. Actually, I kind of forgot about the chocolate powder until the end, so that didn't work in my favor. But the one you're referring to is, yeah, the biggest one of the show, where I'd made the biscuits, something I'd made more than anything else in my life in cooking, or these biscuits. So I mix up the biscuit recipe, but somehow I must have got distracted in with that pie or something. I can't even exactly remember how it happens, but I mixed it up and put the biscuits in the oven. Plenty of time. They take about 12 minutes to bake. You know, it was like 15 or 16 minutes. But then about 5 minutes later, I look down at my station, as they call it, and I see, and I realize, Gary, you had just put the milk and the flour in. You had not put in the baking soda, the baking powder, the salt, the sugar, all the rest of the ingredients. All that is was flour and milk in there that you're baking. Oh, my God, that's not going to taste worth a darn. I honestly said, should I just give up right now because I don't have any time? And I thought, no, I'm going to try to throw those biscuits. I have never made biscuits so quick. I threw it all together. and just kind of quickly kneaded them, didn't roll them out. I just put them on the pan, and they had about 8 minutes to bake, I think, if I remember right, and they usually take, like I said, 12 minutes, and I said, have to do with what I can. And when I took them out of the oven at the very last minute, I could tell they weren't completely set, but at least they weren't bad, so I'll give it a shot. And
Did you turn the oven up hotter than you would have?
Or? No, it's a real hot oven already, and I knew that would just, you know, it would cook the outside more, but do worse on the inside.
Right.
Of it.
Yep. Mm. So going in then, I mean, you said something relatively optimistic, but inside in your heart of hearts, were you worried at that point?
I was worried. I thought, well, the biscuits could be doughy, and you know, most people don't like that. I kind of like doughy stuff, but I know most people don't. Plus, I knew I'd, you know, that chocolate powder, I just kind of thrown that in at the last minute. I thought, well, if I was had a chance coming into this, maybe that's it. So I was so surprised, and I don't think I heard it till last night. Well, at the show, I knew it wasn't as bad as I thought, but last night on the show, I heard something I don't think I'd heard when I taped it, it was when the judges talked when we weren't there, so maybe I hadn't heard. Anyway, one of the judges basically said that I kind of won the dessert round.
And oh, yeah, they thought it was your best moment.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, interestingly enough, the mistakes I made weren't the one, those big mistakes weren't the ones that ultimately lost the show.
Yeah. And what's so interesting is it reminds us of what's easy to take for granted, the high stakes that are involved. I mean, it's not exactly life and death, but on the other hand, a really wonderful prize awaits the winner, and here you are under the close scrutiny of television cameras and trying to do something you've never exactly done before in a very tight time span. It is perfectly understandable for a mistake to get made, and of course a couple of them were made, and a couple of big mistakes.
But I think, you know, of course I've replayed this in my mind. Let me say before we run out of time that when I went into this, like a lot of competitors, and certainly I didn't want to be the first one eliminated.
Hmm.
There's no shame in that. I mean, because whatever happened. But still, you don't want to be the first one off.
Well, you want to have the fun of being part of the show, and that fun is diminished when you're shown the door.
So when I made that first cut, I think I did relax a little bit more. And what ultimately happened, I made it all the way. I was on the whole show. And I was not unproud of what I did. I'd go back and I'd put more salt in this. I would figure out how to put some kind of lid on it to do that. I would try to find other bread all these what ifs, you know, that maybe I would have won. But they didn't. And, you know, under the pressure, it didn't happen. I was perfectly happy at the end. Would have loved to have the $10,000, but the fact that I was on the whole show and didn't cut my finger off or do something extremely stupid.
Or cut someone else's finger off.
I was a happy man.
Yeah, well, rightly so. And you did Wisconsin proud, too, just the persona you projected was just of warmth and good humor and optimism and just all those things we love about you. And it was a real thrill to see you on that screen and really great to see you do such a fine job with such a challenging scenario.
Well, thanks, Greg. I appreciate that.
Has this transformed you as a cook? Are you going to cook differently from now on? Are gastriques going to be a regular part of your meals?
You know, yeah, since then, not a lot, not every day for sure, but I've thrown in a little more challenging things than I would have. One thing I've gotten better at, certainly, is, you know, when I prepare a meal, is getting everything done pretty much at the same time.
Mm.
That's something that I hadn't been very good at before, and I think preparing for the show and the show itself helped me do that. So, yeah, it's been an aid to me.
Well, one more reason to be glad for the experience.